Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Calling It, recording Wednesday, January 29th, just past the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. My name is Alex Barth. Alex Lebowitz is busy in Miami this week. He's doing it up at the Super Bowl, as he tends to do. He will be back on the next episode with a bunch of stories for us from South Beach. So in the meantime, a special treat. We have a guest co-host for this episode. It is my former cohort from CLNS Media. Evan Lazar is going to take us through some takes, and we're not just going to talk football on the show. So you'll get to hear Evan talk about more than just football, more than just X's and O's, more than just the Patriots. Evan, how are you?
I'm good. Two things, quickly. Okay. Former cohort still sounds weird to me. I haven't accepted it yet. Second thing, Lebowitz, we know he can get a little bit rowdy at these Super Bowls. We were with him in the Super Bowl last year in Atlanta and had some fun with Lebowitz. So I'm sure he's having a great time down there in Miami and South Beach.
I mean, did you see the media party this year? It was like outside.
Media party last year was pretty good, I thought. There's good food, good drink.
Wasn't outside.
I remember what happened that night. Let's put it to you that way.
No, that was a fun night. I remember what happened. That was a fun
night. I know
night.
You remember what happened. I'm just saying I remember what happened.
Okay, that's fair. No, we had a good time that night. You bummed it all? You're not back this year? Not the Patriots, but you personally?
Yeah, you know, I think that it didn't hit me that I wasn't going to go to the Super Bowl until people started tweeting things from the Super Bowl, you know, and you see other people down there. I'm not totally bummed because it is a busy week and there's a lot going on and it's a lot of long nights. And there's, if your team isn't in it, if your team you cover or the team that you're a fan of isn't in it, then you're not really, you know, adding much to your coverage by going, in my opinion. I don't know how much Patriots fans really care about this game or really want to hear about all the different details and all the different players on both sides of the ball, but you know, a little bit, yeah, you get a little bit of FOMO, that's for sure.
Yeah, I kind of had the same thing where it didn't hit me until it kind of snuck up on me, honestly. And
yeah,
I started seeing the stuff from Time Hop from last year, and that's kind of when it sunk in. I know you said that you're kind of disinterested with the game. I think a lot of people are. There's not a lot of juice to this matchup. It's two interesting teams, but, I mean, Mahomes is a great quarterback. The Garoppolo storyline doesn't exist outside of a handful of people in New England that, oh, Brady's former backup could win a quarterback. I don't think that could win a Super Bowl. I don't think that's much of a national narrative. But, still, I mean, I got to get your take on the game and what you're thinking.
Yeah, it's funny because the Patriots aren't in the Super Bowl and the Super Bowl doesn't seem to have as much juice because there's nobody to hate in this matchup.
Right.
And Niners fans and Chiefs fans might have their opinions on things, but I don't think that people have a ton of real feelings or animosity towards either one of these teams. Neither team has won in a while. You know, San Francisco was there obviously with Kaepernick, but lost in the Super Bowl. And there's just not a ton of juice. I think the biggest thing is probably just Andy Reid and that storyline on top of being local with the Brady storyline with Jimmy Garoppolo. But I also think that because there's not a ton of juice going into the game, and when you really start to look at some of the matchups and some of the schematic things about this game, I think it's going to be a really good football game. And maybe that will kind of end up being the legacy of this game is, wow, this one snuck up a little bit on all of us. There wasn't a ton of buzz going into it, and then it was an all-time game once things are said and done.
No, I feel really similar. I think it's going to be an exciting game, but it's, you know, it just feels like any other game. It doesn't feel like it's the Super Bowl. There isn't this in-depth, you know, hatred or anything like that. You want to put some juice to it. This is how much I'm searching for storylines in this game. You want to put some juice to this, Evan. You're a big draft guy. Through the Frank Clark trades and D Ford trades, right?
Yeah.
From last year, there is this weird scenario where obviously the Niners and Chiefs will pick 63rd and 64th. Those are the last two picks in the second round. Now, through those trades, the Seahawks were given one of those two picks, and the original qualification on the pick was whichever pick is lower in the round, whichever is a worse pick, the Seahawks get that pick. So the way it worked out, the fact that both of these teams happened to be in the Super Bowl, right? If the Niners had lost to the Packers, the Seahawks would get the Chiefs pick already. It would be over. But the way it's all worked out, whoever wins the Super Bowl loses their second round pick to Seattle. And I am convincing myself, Evan, that whoever is taken 64th in this draft is going to be a generational superstar. So that narrative will mean something someday. So yeah. There is your and the loser, by the way, consolation prize, gets to keep their second round pick. So that's me trying to give this game juice.
Yeah, you know, I think the best way to give it juice in reality, that's a great point. I love where you're headed with that.
I mean, we'll see who goes 64th, who the Seahawks take 64th, or if it's traded or something. Like, I'm going to follow that now. Yeah. I am going to track that 64th pick like a pick has never been tracked before. This might as well be the first round pick the Patriots traded for Belichick to the Jets in my mind. It's the only way I'm going to care about the outcome of this game.
Okay, well, what happens, though, if that pick then gets traded? You're going to have to go down a rabbit hole of you could be over a couple of different drafts. I mean, this could turn into the Jimmy Garoppolo
I'm still tracking the Jimmy Garoppolo trade. Did you not see earlier this week? Yeah. I went back and tracked all 7 picks involved in the Bill Belichick trade.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. You could be going down another kind of rabbit hole of where all these picks go. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying it opens up a whole can of worms.
All right. I need your pick for the game, though.
Yeah, well, I think the really interesting thing about this game is I think there's going to be, like a lot of Super Bowls early, a bit of a feeling out process about how each defense is going to defend the other offense, because both offenses present so much talent and also so much schematic kind of innovation that they're difficult offenses to match up against. So early on in this game, I'm really fascinated to see what kind of coverages and what kind of boxes both teams give the opponent, because the Chiefs, for instance, I think they're going to want to get San Francisco into as many man coverage situations as they possibly can, because San Francisco is going to want to play their cover three. They're going to want to play zone. I think the Chiefs are going to want to try to get them into man somehow. Now, if they go RPO heavy, which is what the Chiefs do a lot of the time anyway, they're 25% RPO. It's the number one RPO offense in the entire NFL. How do the Niners match that? Now, the Patriots matched a lot of the RPO stuff that the Chiefs did with two deep coverages, right? They put two deep safeties in the back end, and they were able to kind of play the run one man short, because this Chiefs running game is not necessarily as potent as the other elements of this offense. So I think that there's a strategy for San Francisco's defense where they play some two deep coverage, which isn't necessarily their MO, because they want to play that post safety cover three. They play some of that two deep coverage and force the Chiefs to make a decision. Either we're going to throw it against the difficult coverage to throw it against, or we're going to actually trust our running backs and our running game and hand the ball off. And I think San Francisco is going to beg Kansas City to hand the ball off. You know, I think that's the type of game that they want to play. On the other side of the ball, it's the opposite, right? And I'm very curious to see what the Chiefs defense does schematically against the Niners offense, because are they going to play single high and they're going to play with loaded boxes, and are they going to really force the game into Jimmy Garoppolo's hands, or are they going to do what some of the other teams have done recently, which is play a little bit lighter up front and force them to run the football to try to keep the score lower? It's going to be a fascinating kind of feeling out process in the first quarter of how these defenses are going to fit the run, how they're going to play the run of the opponent. But I think that Kansas City has a fascinating kind of, you know, conundrum about them of, are they going to actually run the football? Are they willing to hand the ball off 30 times in this game to win? That's obviously not what they want to do, and it's not Andy Reid's MO. So I'm picking the Niners, though, in the game. That's my long answer to what I'm getting to.
I was going
to
say, there better be a pick in there.
Yeah, I'm picking the Niners to win the game. And I think the reason why is that there's a couple of different things that I like about what they do on both sides of the ball against this Chiefs attack in particular. One, they limit big plays better than any defense in the league. That's the Kansas City MO. They're going to want to make big plays on offense. They're going to want to create big plays down the field with Tyreek Hill. This Niners defense has a lot of different kind of ways that they can go about covering those deep passes and forcing Patrick Mahomes to check the ball down and throw the shorter routes, things like that. The other thing is a lot of people have pointed to how the Chiefs defense slowed down Derrick Henry. This is a different running game than what they face against Tennessee, a much more diverse rushing attack. San Francisco can do just about anything against you on the ground. So I think that San Francisco is going to be able to run the ball a little bit, and I think that they're going to be able to limit big plays. and they end up winning this game somewhere around 27-24.
See, I picked the Chiefs on the show last week. I just think Patrick Mahomes has been on such a roll. I'm kind of regretting that pick since, but I'm going to stick to my guns on that one. Real quick, just for old time's sake here, keep it short. Give me a key matchup from this one.
Yeah, you know, I think we talked about this today on one of our videos, and it's kind of an interesting conundrum of a key matchup. I think that there's two key matchups here. First of all, Mike Pennell, name that's going to hurt some Patriots fans' ears, and some of the guys in the middle of the Chiefs defense against the rushing attack of San Francisco is a big one. But I'm going to go on the other side of the ball. When the Chiefs have the football, Damian Williams out of the backfield, when you play those zone coverages, those cover three, what did the Patriots do against Seattle in the Super Bowl in 2014? They threw the ball to Shane Vereen 15 times out of the backfield. I think that there's going to be ways and opportunities for the Chiefs to formation open one-on-one situations for Damian Williams against a linebacker out of the backfield. And I'm really looking to see if he can take advantage of some of those.
See, I can't get past the coaching matchup. I that is maybe the most interesting thing to me from this game outside of that second round pick. You have two guys who really have the same weakness, the same glaring weakness. They're both known as poor game managers. They both seem to lack the ability to handle intense situations within the game. And in a game like this, that becomes so important. So I'm curious if maybe, you know, does Andy Reid tend to overthink? Is that why he makes some of these mistakes? Does Kyle Shanahan tend to overthink? Is that why he makes some of these mistakes? Knowing what's on the other sideline, does that help these guys settle down? Or will it be, and this would be fascinating, this is what I'm rooting for because it would just be entertaining as hell, will it be the two of them just making horrible decisions back and forth like a tennis match and all of us just rolling our eyes at it? That I won't lie, I wouldn't hate seeing that. But
yeah, it's two coaches that are probably the two best schemers and on the offensive side of the ball in the entire league.
Right, you good know, coaches, but they
really
have that
probably
weakness.
One or two guys. I would agree. I think Shanahan's gotten a little bit past the 28-3 stuff. Certainly last 2 weeks ago against the Packers in the NFC Championship game, he did not quit running the football by any means. So I think that he's almost gone the other direction where he's not going to make that same mistake twice, and he will continue to run the football.
All right, and we will see. Again, the game is on Sunday. Are you guys covering, doing anything for that?
Yeah, we'll probably have some stuff going on. If there's something that's really fascinating to me from the game in terms of like a schematic breakdown, film breakdown type thing, I'll probably do something like that.
All right, there you go. Let's talk some basketball because I know you're a big basketball guy and we're kind of heading into uncharted territory here for you. We're going to make you talk some non-football. Although last year at Radio Row, you came on our show to talk Kyrie. And if I remember correctly, I think you said at the time that Kyrie was going to be fine in Boston.
Listen, I'm a fan of the Celtics first and foremost. Obviously, my reporting expertise is in the football realm. So I'm a fan of the Celtics. So I was optimistic as a fan that they could make it work.
That did not happen. Spoiler alert.
And it did not happen, no.
I will say, though, this team, they're coming off of a three-game road trip that, to me, I learned a lot about this team. I'll throw out the game in New Orleans because, you know, for better or worse, that game should probably not have been played. I'm not sure how much guys' heads were in it, which, again, is fine. I'm going to throw that one out, though. I don't think there's anything you can take from that game. But you look at the other two games they just played on the road. To get down 16 against an Orlando Magic team that brings a lot of size, really one of the biggest teams in the league, to get down 16 without your leading rebounder, without your two of your top three scorers and come back and win that game, that was huge for me to see the team win the game like that. That's not a game the team wins last season. And then to go into Miami, a team that's only lost at home twice all season, best home record in the league, again, without your second leading scorer, Jason Tatum, without your leading big man, Enes Kanter, and take that game the way they did, fending off wave after wave after wave from the Heat and getting secondary help from guys like Semi Ojeleye, who had a great name. Javonte Green has been great over the last couple of games. I am impressed. This team right now is better than I thought they would be. I thought they'd be a fun story, little engine that could sort of team. But to me right now, you know, outside of the Bucks, who are obviously on another level, I think the Celtics have as good a shot as anybody in the East.
Yeah, I like your optimism. I think the biggest thing is that this team is a lot like the Isaiah Thomas Celtics team, but a little bit better, right? Like, their other young guys are a little bit older. I think Kemba Walker is an upgrade a little bit over Isaiah just because on the defensive side of the ball. We talked a lot about when Isaiah was around, just how much they had to compensate for his lack of height on defense, right? And basically Marcus Smart, a lot of the time in particular, was covering like 1.5 guys essentially on the perimeter because he was making up for Isaiah. I think Kemba is a little bit better on defense. He's obviously not 6'8" or anything like that. He's a little bit on the smaller side too, but I think he's a little bit better on defense certainly. And this team has kind of matured a lot. And I think Jaylen Brown's probably an all-star, honestly, in the East. I don't think that's that outlandish of a take. And his consistency night in, night out, and his shooting touch and his handles have just improved tremendously from where he was a couple of years ago or even last year. He is finishing with great touch around the rim. He's also shooting the jumper and shooting the three much better. Gets a little bit of a mid-range game going last night against the Heat, and his handles have really improved as well. So he's blossomed and taken that next step forward that we kind of expected. And I think a lot of those things are happening at the same time. And when you give Brad Stevens a team like this that is going to buy in, that everybody's going to understand their role, that they're going to play within the system and within the framework of what Brad Stevens is preaching and not outside of it, Brad Stevens is going to get the best out of this team. He might be one of those coaches, besides maybe like a Greg Popovich or something like that, that would get the absolute most out of a team that's built like this, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. I want to go back to the point you made, because it's interesting comparing them to the Isaiah Thomas Celtics.
They're not that different.
But correct me if I'm wrong, Jason Tatum never played with Isaiah Thomas in Boston, right? Because that was the year they traded down from 1 to 3 and took Tatum,
yes. Right?
Or did they get 1 year together?
I thought that Tatum's rookie year was Isaiah's last year with Boston, because Tatum had the dunk on LeBron and Isaiah was supposed to play in that series. Was that Kyrie's first year?
That Tatum 2017. That's what I'm saying. I think that was after the trade. Tatum's first year was 17-18. Yeah, no, Thomas's last year was 16-17. So they never played together. I mean, that to me is the game changer, because the thing with Isaiah Thomas was he, as good as he was at getting to the basket and scoring through contact, we never got to see him kick and drive much because he never really had the guy to play that game with. It was Terry Rozier maybe at times, but he was wildly inconsistent. You have an elite kick and drive perimeter threat. I mean, he can do a lot more too, but you have an elite kick and drive perimeter threat now in Jason Tatum. That to me is a huge difference. Isaiah Thomas, part of the reason it was so amazing seeing him do what he did is because the team had no other options. It was either he went off or they lost. And that was part of why
it was him and Horford. You know, they had Horford in the team.
To me, Tatum now makes more of a difference than Horford did on those teams, right?
Right, that's the kind of the trade is off, really, is, you know, in terms of star power, is this team has Tatum, that team, and this team has Hayward too. You know, Gordon Hayward's been really, really consistently good now for about a month and a half.
He killed that 3-game road trip. He was great.
Yeah, he was great last night, and he doesn't have that same first step that he had in Utah since post ankle injury, right? Like, he's not the guy that can get around and turn the corner as much, but he's so crafty. You know, he really knows how to win with body positioning and just getting guys to kind of fall off of him in the mid range and pull up and hit those mid range jump shots. He's still got the 3-pointer. You know, he's had a really good season. I think that a lot of people rag on Hayward because he makes a lot of money. He's kind of becoming like the Celtics version of Kevin Love for those Cavs teams, where it's like, why are we paying this guy this kind of money? You know, he's kind of just the third fiddle, so to speak. But I think that Hayward's been quietly really, really good now for a better part of the season, I would say.
You know what else he's done too that I noticed, and it's gone kind of under the radar? With Cantor out, he's been among their leading rebounders in most of these games. He pulled 14 the other night. That was against Orlando to start the trip. That's the most he's had since 2015. So he's starting to contribute in other ways and kind of take on that veteran role, which to me is huge. And we'll see. I mean, they got Golden State Thursday night. That they should probably rest Tatum for that if there's any doubt if he's ready to go and both of that. And then they got a big game against Philly on Saturday, and they're right in that pack there in the Eastern Conference. So that's going to get interesting. I do want to talk about, of course, Kobe Bryant. We haven't done a show since his unfortunate passing on Sunday. And I want to reiterate something I said on Twitter, because to me, Kobe was one of the ultimate examples of that silent assassin athlete. He didn't care about the clout. He didn't care about the storylines. He was not a big social media guy. It wasn't even necessarily about winning for him. It was about dismantling the opponent piece by piece, going out and not just beating somebody, but blowing them out of the building, not just scoring points, but setting records. And you look around the landscape of sports now, and the guys who are left like that, there are only two names that came to my mind, were Tom Brady and Tiger Woods. And then there's some, if you go a little further back, you could certainly throw, you know, a Pedro Martinez into that conversation. You could certainly throw a Mariano Rivera into that conversation. You know, guys like that. If you go further back, you can go, you can put Michael Jordan in. You can certainly put Mike Tyson in that conversation. But you go back the last 10 years, right? Guys who were drafted or for individual sports, guys who've come into their sports since 2010. That singular focus on just domination, that is it. That breed of athlete is going extinct. Kobe was the poster boy, even maybe more so than Brady, because in the last couple years, he's sort of fallen off that track. Kobe, to me, may have been the poster boy for that sort of just assassin mentality. And they just don't make athletes like that anymore. We don't, and maybe it's social media, maybe it's a coincidence, I don't know, but that kind of guy just doesn't come along anymore.
Yeah, I think it's a couple of things. I think that it's social media in this day and age and the type of just our generation and the people that are coming into this league just look at things a little bit differently. I think that there's a lot of kind of brand empowerment going on, right, where the brand of the player sometimes becomes not necessarily more important than winning or more important than success on the field or on the court, but it becomes another element of it, right? It's right. Just it's part of the kind of priorities that a player has. I also think that there are some young players that are kind of coming into that sort of zone of theirs that just haven't had the opportunity yet to win titles and stack those types of seasons together where we can go ahead and say, okay, you know, he's like Kobe, he's like Tom Brady, because those guys have already been there and done it. You know, we just haven't seen them do it yet. I think, for example, you know, I think there's a lot of players in the NBA that can get there. I don't know if they're locked in like that 100% of the time. But if you read some of the stories about Kawhi Leonard, for example.
Yeah, that's a good one.
He's a lot quieter about it, and he's not really a guy that's necessarily as vocal as some of these other guys were about that tenacious. And his on-court demeanor is certainly different than a guy like Kobe or Brady or Tiger Woods, you know, that are always fired up and throwing fist pumps and screaming and things like that. But when you read stories from behind the scenes about Kawhi Leonard, especially last year with Toronto, he's a killer. You know, he's a guy even in practice that wants to beat you. You know, I forget who it was that was his teammate that he was going up against, but he had a moment like in practice, a story that I read that he said, like, you're not going to score this entire scrimmage. And he just locked the guy down the entire scrimmage and didn't even come close to scoring. You know, those types of situations, I think that Kawhi is in that category. I think Giannis is trending towards that. Okay. You know, I don't know if he's there yet, but I think that Giannis wants to be great. You know, you don't go from where he came from in Greece and then develop this way to MVP status, and he might win MVP again.
Yeah,
you know, he might be a back-to-back MVP winner, and there's not a ton of those guys in the course of the NBA history. There's not a ton of guys that have two, and there's not a ton of guys that have back-to-back. And I think that if he does that, right, then I think you got to put him in that category that he's at least in the gym and he's at least working on his craft at a high level.
No, and I mean, I think that's part of it, too. A couple more names that came into my mind. I think Russell Wilson might be kind of in that territory.
I was going to mention him for football.
Right, and I'm interested to see what Patrick Mahomes does on Sunday. Actually, he's really impressed me this year, kind of how he's grown as a leader. And then, yeah, I mean, baseball doesn't really lend itself. I thought Altuve at one point was that guy. That's obviously not true now. But it's still, you know, they're rare to begin with, these kind of athletes, and that's what makes them so special. It's my favorite kind of athlete, by the way. Like, I despised Kobe Bryant when he was in the league because I rooted for the Celtics. I know they won in 07, but the 2010 finals crushed me. And Kobe was a huge part of that. Like, I despised him, but I would watch highlights. I still, you know, I've been watching highlights the last couple of days, and I'm just like, you know, him yelling at the bench, this guy can't guard me, put somebody else on me.
Yeah.
That's just so cool. that's just so damn cool. Like,
yeah,
you can't not appreciate. You don't have to like it. Part of what makes it great is, like, I didn't realize I could have so much disdain for an athlete until a guy like Kobe Bryant, and that made it cool. He made me go to another level of fanhood because he was on such another level of as a player.
Yeah, and I think that he brought out the best in other players too. Like Paul Pierce, when he kind of mentioned his sort of tribute to Kobe on The Jump today or yesterday, he said that, you know, he doesn't become the truth without Kobe Bryant because Kobe pushed him to be that kind of assassin. And Pierce was one of those guys too that, sure, you know, he wanted to take your heart out and show it to you. Same with KG.
Got
and
stabbed those guys, 21 times. For anybody who's never heard this story, it's my favorite Paul Pierce. He got stabbed, I think it was his second or third season in the league. 11 days before the season, he got stabbed 21 times in the back. He was the only member of the Celtics that season to play all 82 games.
Yeah, he was exactly that type of guy. And yeah, you know, the Kobe thing, it's kind of shook me, you know, pretty harder than I thought. You know, I kind of think about it sometimes, even still. And obviously, there's so much media attention on it as well. So it's constantly getting popped up, you know, whether it's on social media or watching on TV. It's amazing, though, the kind of rallying that people have done around this, right? You know, like, we all feel like everybody in the sports community right now is, like, giving us all a virtual hug, you know?
Right.
Because this is just such a tragedy, you know, that everybody else on board, too, and his daughter and all that kind of stuff. But just such a tragedy to see somebody that, especially in that sport, you really get to know these basketball players probably more than anybody else. And Kobe, like Michael Jordan, he had, you know, his lifestyle brands, his shoes, you know, that kind of stuff. And it just, like, people owned Kobe's, people owned his clothes. You know, it just, it's more than just the sport itself. And the impact that he had on people was bigger than that. And it feels like you knew him because of how popular and how famous and how, you know, much he was involved in your life. So it's been a tough week, I think, for everybody.
I was texting my brother and my dad, and we were trying to figure out, like, we were texting my dad, you know, what is this like? What is compares to this?
Yeah,
and we really couldn't find anything, especially because of the social media element of it all. The closest thing to me, I remember the day after Michael Jackson died, I was in the car with my mom, and the local hip hop station played Man in the Mirror or something. Like it was some, you know, very poppy Michael Jackson song. It was not a song that should have played on that station. It was Jammin' 94.5. And in Boston, the DJ comes on after and says, you know what? I never thought I would play Michael Jackson on this station. Never in my life did I think that would happen, but this is that big of a deal. And then I turned on NHL Network the other night, and they spent the first 10 minutes of their coverage of that night's games talking about Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I don't want to say they're quite the same thing in terms of there is some similarity too. And this is another thing we don't need to get into, but, they both certainly had their demons.
Yeah.
And seeing how that's been discussed has been interesting. But, you know, you talk about somebody who's an absolute titan of their field, an absolute, you know, as close to perfect as you get in their craft. And that's Kobe Bryant right there. All right. We do got a little bit of time left, Evan. And I do want to talk about this, and I want to get your thoughts on it, because we've obviously talked a bunch of football in our lives.
Yes.
In the time we've known each other, the 2+ years we've known each other, we've talked some basketball, not just that. Me and you would talk basketball down at Gillette. The Bruins, Stanley Cup run, we talked about. I caught you that one time saying that they would lose to Toronto in the first round. I don't think the two of us have ever talked much baseball. It's probably the fourth most talked about sport between the two of us.
Yeah, down at Gillette. I would agree with that.
Maybe even fifth, because I'll talk about, like, nonsense stuff. You probably consider arena football a separate sport. But –
Oh yeah, definitely.
RIP, arena football. The Red Sox are a mess right now. You talk about, you know, we just talked about the Celtics, right? And this is a team that's young, they're exciting, they're easy to root for. The Red Sox are going the absolute opposite direction right now. It's a mess. Right.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have a manager, and we're, what, a couple of weeks away from pitchers and catchers report?
We are 13 days away. Today is actually... you call it an equinox, whatever you want to call it. As of today, we are closer to the start of spring training than we are to the day they fired Alex Cora.
Yeah, so we're coming to it. And then obviously the best player on the team is on the trade block also. So there's a lot of big things happening with the Red Sox. it pains me to say this, and as a fan of the Red Sox, it really pains me to say this, but I think they got to trade Mookie.
They absolutely have to trade Mookie. Yeah. You're right, though.
Yeah, it stinks, and I wish that they could just pay him too, but if he's looking for a 12-year, $400 million contract, he's going to have to get it elsewhere, in my opinion. And if you're not going to pay him the money, then the only way that you can get anything back in return for him is by trading him. So they have to, they can't get nothing for Mookie Betts. I know there's draft pick compensation that they could get, but let's be real.
Look at you caring about baseball draft picks.
I'm not, but I listened today and Tony Maz on the radio. I trust Maz with his baseball takes more than just about anybody. And he obviously broke down the difference between the luxury tax and not over the luxury tax and how that affects the draft pick compensation. And they've just really backed themselves into a corner here where if they can't come to terms with him, Mookie, on a contract, and they're going to have to trade him because otherwise they're going to risk losing him for absolutely nothing. And as much as I want to sit here and say, I'll take the 1 year of Mookie Betts and make another run at the World Series, with the managerial situation that they have right now, I don't know if that's even viable, right? We don't know what's going to happen with the health of some of their pitchers, like Chris Sale, for example, and I just don't know if a run at a World Series is even an option on the table that they're realistically have right now. And if that's the case, then you really got to trade Mookie Betts. But the manager thing, obviously the Alex Cora thing, it was a huge deal this offseason. JD Martinez opting into his contract at the time seemed like a good thing for as a fan because you want to see the best lineup out there possible. And JD's obviously a big part of that. But now they've backed themselves into a corner by having JD Martinez on the books too, where they're over that luxury tax threshold, and now Mookie is kind of this, you know, hanging in the winds, this lame duck. If JD doesn't come back, then I think you can bring Mookie back a lot easier.
I think Mookie is back already. I think he has his deal if JD doesn't come back, because you need right. You know, even if you're rebuilding, you need somebody to get people to come out to the ballpark, and that's Mookie Betts if it's not JD Martinez. To kind of tie everything you just talked about together too, I think it's compounded by the issue that they may lose draft picks here whenever this punishment comes down. By the way, the MLB punishment for the videotaping is probably going to come before the NFL's punishment to the Patriots, which, by the way, that happened almost 3 months ago now.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw or heard what Goodell said. Banana land.
It's brutal. Well, basically, not to get into that whole thing again, but just reading through between the lines, I think it's obvious that Goodell's getting pressure from the other 31 owners to come down hard on the Patriots. And he's sitting there looking at the evidence of the Bengals thing and being like, how am I supposed to come down hard on them on something that they truly didn't do this time? So you know, no evidence.
Not to get too sidetracked. Do you want a conspiracy theory?
Yeah, I want one.
Okay. So if basically the only way the NFL can actually punish the Patriots, if the NFL punishes the Patriots, they are saying that Kraft Sports Productions is not a separate entity. It is part of the New England Patriots football team, right?
Right.
Great, great. If Kraft Sports Productions is part of the Patriots team, that means that, and not just the Patriots, across the whole league, any team that has one of these, air quotes, external media partners, like Kraft Sports Production, that revenue would technically be football revenue. Meaning the owners would not be able to pocket all of it. They would have to share it with the players. So I wonder if Goodell and the owners are weighing, you know, if we punish the Patriots, it could cost them a bunch of money to punish the Patriots, because the players union might come in and say, well, then all this production stuff is football money. So you have to give us some of that money. So I wonder if that's where they are. I wonder
it's a double edged sword. It really is a slippery slope, because then every team has a media entity in some way, shape, or form associated with the team that runs their social media, that does all that kind of stuff. All 32 teams have it now. So if you open up that Pandora's box, now in every other instance, you know, the Baltimore Ravens, for example, do this like 360 degree camera thing of the field that their social media team runs, and that has pictures of the field, has pictures of the opponent's sideline. All of a sudden, you're starting to open up this Pandora's box of, okay, now we're going to have to come up with set rules for what these entities can do and can't do. And
it's not just that. It's if that 360-degree thing the Ravens has is sponsored,
right?
The players get some of that money.
Yeah, I mean, it's
right now they don't. I think it comes down to the money. And I think that's at the core issue. And then, you know, with the CBA coming up here in 2 years, if the league punishes the Patriots, the players union comes out and says, well, then that's football money you have to pay us. And the league says no. You're looking at another issue. All right, back to the Red Sox. So back to the Red Sox.
Just one thing quickly about this whole thing.
Yeah.
The other teams in the NFL want draft picks lost for the Patriots. That's ultimately what they want to see, is because they want to hurt the Patriots on the field for this.
Right.
So they want the league to I don't know what type of draft pick. I you know, it's not going to be a first round pick, right? But they want some draft pick taken away for the Patriots as a result of this. But in order to do that, they either need to have a link to football ops or do what we're discussing right now and say every media entity is a part of football operations. So it's just, there's a lot of, you know, dots that they need to be able to connect to do that. But there's a lot of owners in this league that thought that Goodell obviously went soft on Spygate, and then they blamed Deflategate solely on Brady for the most part, and really kind of, I know they lost a pick in that as well, but Brady was the one that got the brunt of that, right, with the suspension. And I think that they really want to see the league come hammer down on the Patriots football operations and hurt them with draft pick compensation being stripped away from them.
All right, back to the Red Sox here. Speaking of strip draft picks, we were talking about with having to trade Mookie Betts, and you know they got to figure something out here. You got to remember, Dave Dombrowski stripped this farm system dry. They got nobody. They got a couple of interesting names: Brian Mata, Tanner Hawk, Jaron Duran is one that really stands out to me. But they have just one top 100 prospect. They don't have the depth these other organizations do, and they have other guys they're going to have to pay after Mookie. So the reality is, if they're going to lose picks and lose the ability to restock that farm system, it may either be you trade Mookie Betts now, or you just suck for the next 5 to 8 years with no prospects coming up through the system, right? You're only going to go as far as Rafael Devers and Andrew Benintendi will carry you. And I mean, those are good players, don't get me wrong, but they're starting pitching depth, organizational depth. It's practically non-existent, right? I said the name Brian Mata. I said the name Tanner Houck. That's it. That's more or less it. Dave Dombrowski ruined a number of potential starters by trying to force them into the bullpen, trying to find quick solutions last year. It did not work. So, yeah, I think they're at a point where they have to trade Mookie Betts, but this whole thing about Will Myers from San Diego, get the hell out of here with Will Myers. I want nothing to do with Will Myers. Keep your Will Myers. I want nothing to do with that. Give me prospects. And elite prospects. No, you know, dumping salary for mid-level guys. I don't care about the 78th best prospect in baseball, the catcher. No, give me the guy they have, Patino, the pitcher. He's the 30th ranked prospect in baseball, the 4th ranked pitcher. He's number 2 in their system. Pedro Martinez called him the best young arm in the game. That should be the asking price for Mookie Betts. That should be where the conversation starts. Now, they've shot themselves in the leg, making it very well known that they want to get below the tax. Thank you very much, John Henry, for making Chaim Bloom's life a living hell. But they've got to put their foot down at a point. They need prospects. They need elite prospects for Mookie Betts. No Will Myers. Out of here with that. No major leaguers. No mid-range. Maybe they will. Maybe they won't turn into something prospects. No. Mookie Betts for blue chippers. They won't do it because this organization manages to screw the easiest thing in the world up every single time, but that's what it should be.
Yeah, this will be the Jimmy G trade all over again if it goes south.
Oh,
right?
God, like, I hate that you just said that because you're so right.
You didn't get enough compensation for the player.
Oh, you're so right, and that's so damn annoying. All right, so that means what year was Jimmy G trade? 2017?
Yes.
So 2 years ago, so we can pencil the Padres into the World Series in 2 years. There you go. All right, You got anything else you want to leave the people with here, Evan? We're pushing 40 minutes. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem at all. No, I think that we just about covered it. I think that this Super Bowl, though, I know that the buzz isn't there. I know Patriots fans are bummed that the Patriots aren't in it, but just appreciate some of the offense that you're going to see in this game, because they're going to scheme it up to a level that is about as high as it gets at any level of football, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Love it. And tell the people where they can find your work.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at EZLazar, L-A-Z-A-R, and CLNSmedia.com, CLNS Media YouTube page as well. We got some videos going on there this week about the Super Bowl matchup and some other things, Danny Amendola coming back to the Patriots, things like that. And we'll obviously keep you up to date constantly with this Brady stuff. I'm not stooping as low as talking about his real estate and where Giselle is living with the kids and stuff like that, but we'll cover everything that Brady does that means something, and we'll go that direction with
You've got enough people handling that. Stick to the draft threads. Those are good. And of course, Evan and Sierra, they're working through a bit of a personnel shortage in the last it's been a week actually, a week to the day.
Can I ask you one more question?
They do a great job. Yeah.
All right, so rank the Felger and Maz quarterbacks to replace Tom Brady. Andy Dalton, Marcus Mariota, Derek Carr. 1, 2, 3.
No Phillip Rivers?
Okay, all right. All right, put Phillip Rivers in there.
I would go it's tough between – Rivers is probably a better quarterback, but Carr gives you multiple years. I want nothing to do with Dalton or Mariota. I think they're both equally bad. I know people have some glimmer of hope for Mariota. I don't. I'm drafting somebody. At this point, if you have to suck for a year and draft somebody, you just do it. Don't because half-ass putting a team together is how you go 8-8 for 15 straight years, because you never get a good enough draft pick to improve, but and then you never get the talent to get any better. So if I'm them, just bail out for Trevor Lawrence at that point if Brady doesn't come back.
Yeah, I don't know if Belichick will ever do that.
No, he won't. No, he won't.
He won't tank. He won't suck. And I think he's too good of a coach to suck, you know, even if they
it's like Flores in Miami this year.
Yeah. Yeah. But I would say that I would probably put Derek Carr at one on the list of options.
I probably would, because he's only what, like 27?
Yeah, he's younger. He's got plenty of talent and upside. We've seen him put up good numbers when the situation around him is good. I think he could come here and they could elevate him pretty significantly. And I think they could win 9 or 10 games next year with Derek Carr as the quarterback.
I think they could win more games next year with Rivers, but if you're putting a team together, you need Carr, because Rivers is 1 year and that's it.
Yeah, so. I wouldn't sleep on Mariota. I know that a lot of people don't like Mariota, and
I know it's a possibility, but just I don't want
the accuracy is there from him from the pocket, and also I think that Josh McDaniels and Belichick to a degree would love to play with an athletic quarterback. You know, I just think that they would love to be able to play.
Then take Jalen Hurts at 23.
Yeah, I mean, you could. I would love to do that. I think they would love to play 11-on-11 like a lot of these teams. It's not necessarily like having a Lamar Jackson or anything like that, but even some of the things that the Chiefs do with Mahomes' mobility or something like that, just the ability to add that element to the offense, it's such an advantage. I mean, when you're playing, you know, shorthanded, essentially, on every single play by having a guy that can't move. Well, and that's not a knock when he's as good as Brady. You know what I mean?
Right. But, they won 6 Super Bowls playing shorthanded. No, if they're going to go that route, forget Mariota. I'd rather have the blank canvas that is Jalen Hurts, because his football IQ is just so, so high. And I think he's going to pick up whatever they teach him. And they've got some good teachers down there. So
don't sleep on Jordan Love. If that's what they're going to do.
Who would you rather have, Hurts or Love?
I'd probably rather have Hurts in the short term, but I think that Love has more potential long term. You know, there's a lot of things that Love's got to work on from a footwork standpoint, but I think that he's got the capability of being a much better quarterback in the league than Jalen Hurts.
I mean, we both know, and anybody familiar with us knows, we go another hour for this. We'll have you on again before the draft.
Yes, absolutely.
You got stuff you got to get to tonight. So thank you, everybody, very much for tuning in. Again, you can find Evan all over the CLNS media platforms and his NFL draft threads. They're fantastic. They're on his Twitter, @EZLazar. Alex Lovitz will be back next show. We'll recap the Super Bowl. Maybe Mookie Betts will have been traded. Who knows? Will the Red Sox have blown it by the next time we record? We will see. Until then, for Evan Lazar, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.